Welcome to another edition of Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint recap from the Center for International Maritime Security. To prepare for next week's articles on private military contracting, we have the distinct privilege of interviewing Eric Prince, former CEO of Blackwater. We will talk about his new effort to tackle logistical challenges in Africa, the future of PMCs, and lessons he learned from his time at Blackwater. Tell a friend, we're available on iTunes and Stitcher Stream Radio. Remember to leave a comment and a 5-star rating. We think Sea Control is a very fine product, and anyone who says otherwise probably says hashtag out loud during the conversation. Hashtag annoying. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
Welcome to another edition of Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. From the condottieri of the Italian Free States to the privateers of the American Revolution to Sierra Leone, private military contractors have been an important part of military history. Today, we're joined by veteran, entrepreneur, and author, the former CEO of Blackwater, Eric Prince, to discuss their future. Sir, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, before we start the show, I always ask our guests, even if they need no introduction, if you could take a minute, describe yourself, give the audience what you think are the most important beats to understand where you're coming from.
Well, the best thing they could do to understand me is to read Civilian Warriors, my book.
Absolutely.
It will give a far more comprehensive explanation than I can just now. But, you know, I was raised in an entrepreneurial family. My dad started from scratch and built a very large automotive supply business. I was a SEAL after college, truly the best job I ever had, great people to work with. I got out because my dad died and my wife was sick with cancer, and I started Blackwater, really as a place to stay connected to the SEAL teams, and the operating culture there kept saying yes when our government customers needed help. And so it grew exponentially very quickly. And it was rather wrecked by politics, by, I would say, the anti-war left and the plate tectonics of Washington. So now I've started a private equity fund. A couple of years ago, we do direct investing into energy, mining, agriculture type opportunities. And just in the last couple of months, I was named chairman of a publicly listed Hong Kong company with a mandate to build out a aviation and logistics business on the continent of Africa. Really, as I was traveling around Asia and Europe, talking to big institutional investors, large enterprises, high net worth families, they knew of my company's past and had great respect for it. And they said, look, we understand you want to be a money manager, but how you can really help us right now is to sort out our logistics problems as we go to invest and in manage projects in Africa. So that's taking input from the customer, I guess. That's where I'm shifting a bit more of my attention, you know, to really be a true pan-African frontier logistics provider, meaning we help people get in, whether that's an early seismic crew, an engineering study, feasibility analysis, and then once their project is starting, to make sure their equipment gets in safely and professionally. And then once whatever their project is in production, whether it's a mine, an oil field, a refinery, whatever, we make sure that the offtake stays smooth and unhampered from the challenge in weather, roads, criminal mischief, whatever that might be.
Part of this effort, from what I understand, is also going to be the MacArthur and a maritime aspect. Could you describe how you're going to integrate that? And from Africa's geography, if you're also going to integrate somewhat of a riverine aspect to the security and logistics of this new venture?
Sure. The MacArthur was sold off long ago, but the model that we were pursuing in the Blackwater days with the MacArthur, I think, still stands. Look, one of the areas of service that we will provide is even a fisheries management type program. Most of the countries in Africa don't have an effective Coast Guard, let alone an effective means to police their exclusive economic zone. And so we have a I would say an expertise in operating equipment that's been used, that is not top dollar anymore. It's not the new off-the-shelf multi-hundred million or billion-dollar price tag from a Western shipyard, but rather adapting equipment to fulfill the needs of the customer at an affordable level. We'll be able to do basically provide a rental capacity for countries to patrol their fishery zones, to enforce the fishery laws, and make sure that intentional pollution, corruption, and theft are not occurring in their waters. And at the same time, giving them a pretty adequate search and rescue capability. So that's a combination of vessels to do that, certainly for the interdiction parts, and using aircraft with a good maritime search radar to provide overflight.
Something that this reminds me of is during your talk at the Acton Institute, I believe. No, this was a different interview, but you mentioned the flexibility that your vertical integration gave you. You made your own vehicles. You had your own aircraft. Now, with this logistics aspect, it sounds like it's even further vertical integration. Would you imagine that this is an evolution of the Blackwater model, where now you have security and you have added to that the very companies, the private companies that you defended, to add to this logistics piece?
You know, I don't know about that so much. You know, when I talk about vertical integration, I think it's important to have your own stuff in a lot of cases, because if you have to move with immediacy into a challenged area, then you don't have time to try to line up suppliers to get the multiple competitive bids to go do those kind of jobs. If you know what it should cost you and you have the equipment to do it, then you can dispatch it quickly to take care of whatever the challenge is. A road that's out, a medevac that needs doing, a runway that needs construction, a base camp to go up. Those are things that having your own crews, having your own equipment that you can deploy, aircraft to move your equipment in, all that, again, aids in the speed and the project assurance for a customer. So, you know, do I know that I don't know that I'll ever get in the vehicle manufacturing business again. Don't need to. We're not looking to pursue large government contracts to provide armored vehicles. That was something we did back in the Blackwater days because we built a vehicle out of necessity to protect our guys, and figured if it was good enough for our guys, it was enough for the U.S. military. And it was a fantastic vehicle. Unfortunately, it was also blocked by the politics of Washington for major acceptance. Again, another lesson learned.
Maybe answer these two questions. They're a bit in parallel. What do you see as the future of private military contractors, and flowing from that, describe, you know, you're obviously attacking the logistics problem, more your vision of the logistics problem and how it affects stability in Africa? Because as you've said, this isn't the Blackwater model. It's not the pure security model. This is very different. You're providing a different service that has a security aspect. So PMCs, where are they going? What do you think their future is? And then you describe more in detail how you view the problem that you're attacking when you move your venture into Africa.
Sure. I would say, as you know, when you read history, when you read that chapter in my book, you read about how common the presence of PMCs is in the national security space for any country over the last multiple thousand years. So it is not new. It is very much has a robust future, particularly because Western governments have managed to master the most expensive way to wage war. And they, you know, I'll give an example. The recent announcement of a deployment of V-22s to Central Africa to assist in the hunt for Joseph Kony, there's 150 people that go with supporting a couple of V-22s. It's a staggeringly high and expensive number, an unnecessary number. And whether it's a brush fire in some country in Africa or another deployment of some capability in Afghanistan, I see that the cost per soldier budgeted for Afghanistan for 2014 is just north of $2 million per head. Per deployment of U.S. soldier, it's costing the U.S. taxpayer over $2 million. it's a staggeringly high number. If people think contractors are expensive, they should see what their government's charging to do the same thing. On the second side, why the logistics business, and particularly why is it important for Africa? Because the shipping costs are so high, everything is a bit more difficult. You don't have the assurance of shipping something like you would to a Rotterdam or Baltimore or the port of Norfolk with a beautiful interstate highway system that connects the port to the hinterlands that you're trying to get your cargo to. Often in Africa, there's a challenged port that is rather jammed up, followed by muddy or restricted roads with rainy season, with all kinds of other problems. It just makes moving goods in and offtake out very difficult. So you have to almost develop your own logistics channel yourself directly to make it possible for goods to flow in and out. You know, the railroads, good roads, have huge transformational effects on an economy because it lowers your transaction costs. If you think about the Transcontinental Railway, completed in, I think, 1869 in America, it took what was a 30-day transit from coast to coast by foot or horse. Okay, it went from 180 days down to 6 days, literally a 30-to-1 transformation. So when you do that, you're lowering your costs, your shipping costs, everything becomes cheaper, and Africa benefits because they get a cheaper supply of energy, cheaper trade, cheaper food supplies. All those things go way, way down, improving their quality of life. And for the off-taker, the person that's coming to mine or drill or develop, it lowers their transaction costs and gives them a higher degree of assurance that their product will arrive on time and undamaged. So that's why logistics and good transport matters.
Absolutely. On the continent of Africa. Absolutely. And to add upon that, to discuss that PMC aspect, part of this new venture will be, as you described, the security for these logistics. And I'll conflate these two questions because your time is limited. You mentioned in your book, you talk about the cultural challenge. You mention when you woke up to the call to prayer suddenly because it wasn't something that you expected. Africa is such a tapestry of different cultures, different ways of living, and different traditions. You're trying to provide security. What will that security look like? Along your way, you're going to have this logistics train, and this train is going to go through many different cultures and many different kinds of people. Maybe you could describe those two challenges together.
Sure. You know, there's a security aspect, at least, because you want to monitor your goods, know where they are and what's happening. And you know, there's some simple examples. Some of the simple vehicle tracking beacons you can put on your trucks in the United States, in the West, to monitor optimal fuel flow or fuel economy, driving habits of the driver, et cetera. You know, one of the things you have to be mindful of in Africa is fuel theft. Okay. And sometimes drivers will lighten their loads to put a few extra dollars in their pocket, but a simple application of software with a beacon, so you know where that guy is all the time, can prevent that from happening. The same for beaconing your containers. So again, you can find in real time where those are, if they've fallen off a truck somewhere or been diverted. So simple aspects, applications of commercial technology makes a huge difference in sorting out some of those problems. And the thing about Africa is you have to expect the unexpected and plan for that. And you have to be very flexible and very adaptable to the curveballs it constantly throws at you.
Now, one of the issues that is rife in Africa is corruption. So even if you build a logistics model that's effective, you're going to have to deal, like in the Nigerian case, even if your company is not corrupt, the officials that they may deal with are. And then you have issues of oil bunkering and oil theft. Is that how do you see this new venture challenging that corruption obstacle to operations in Africa?
Look, operating in a direct and transparent and excellent manner is essential. you know, when I look at oil bunkering as a problem in Nigeria, it represents almost a 25% theft of national assets. The federal budget in Nigeria is around $30 billion a year, and it's estimated, well estimated, that oil bunkering amounts to almost $7 billion in theft per year. And when you look at it, it's not just organized crime, it's industrialized crime. If you take a team, the so-called rebels, which are really just organized criminals, in the south, they attack one of the pump houses, which drops the pressure in the supply lines. They then have a team come in and cut a section of the pipeline out and weld in their own patch. And on that patch contains their own valves for attaching hoses so they can back a multi-thousand barrel capacity barge into that into the area right off the water, fill up the barge, take it 13 to 15 miles off the coast to a gray market tanker waiting just outside of national waters, and takes tens of thousands of barrels away to be sold. It's multi-million dollar theft. And the only way you can steal that much oil is with barges, with big industrial capability. So it's unfortunately a rampant part of their culture. And hopefully the next election cycle could elect a different kind of leader who could start to suppress that problem. It's a very fixable problem. Very fixable by a private organization that can come in and integrate the means and the needs to stop it. But again, that change will have to occur at the election box.
When you started Blackwater, you would purchase, for example, Presidential to give yourself an aviation aspect to your company. And you've mentioned again the aviation aspect. What sort of assets are you going to use in order to secure your logistics chain? So just as you described, you're looking for that integrated ability to both produce, to disseminate, and to secure these assets. So like Presidential, what kind of particular platforms? I thought the C212 was a really cool story with how you got it across the Atlantic Ocean. If you have, for example, too, any ideas of technical innovations that you're developing now to help you with this unique problem, maybe you could just describe those.
Well, the first thing I'll say is Africa is so vast, and in many cases, the road infrastructure is so weak that to be credible, to be able to operate on the continent, you got to have an aviation capability, both fixed and rotary wing, from truly bush aircraft up to heavy lift ramped birds. So we'll start out in the aviation capability space. We'll endeavor to truly have a pan-African reach. And then we'll integrate into road and maritime capabilities to assist our customers in moving their goods in, making sure their projects get up and running, and make sure they're off smoothly. So, and that could range from a plane that can patrol the pipeline with a good FLIR ball to plenty of ramped aircraft that can land on unimproved strips, even to the point of landing on a very unimproved strip with our own construction equipment to get a more of a hardened MARM type runway up in operation. So we will take expeditionary operations to a whole new level.
Let's go back to future of PMCs writ large and your lessons from Blackwater. So one of your big lessons on the good side, you mention again in your book, Civilian Warriors, available now. You mentioned the lessons you had when it came to your expertise and what you could provide. You had uninsured aircraft because it was what was necessary. You had fixed price contracts because you thought that was a good way of doing business. You acted professionally. These three things led to your success. Unfortunately, part of what led to the downfall was the strictures that did not allow you to defend the company while it was operating. So with a lot of those lessons in mind, how you operated the logistics of doing business within Blackwater itself, the next successful PMC, not a name, but how do you think that they'll operate and what do you think that they will do?
Well, I would say for the in the U.S. market, there's not been another PMC that stepped forward really with their own assets the way Blackwater did. unfortunately, well, I guess the lesson that I learned from Blackwater is don't stand out. Be a run-of-the-mill crowd, don't provide that visual of a solution, and certainly don't show up with your own assets and put your own assets at risk to the U.S. government, because you can get torched very quickly. I think that's hindered the U.S.'s ability to respond, to really call on their industrial base, and limited their operations and their excellence. So, there's a reason I've been involved in a Hong Kong publicly listed company, not a U.S. company anymore, because the litigious nature, the politics of working for the U.S. government has become mighty difficult.
Now, outside the United States, the future of PMCs writ large around the world, like I said before, the great next success story, what do you think will be their business and what will it look like?
Well, I think despite recent press reports that Blackwater was involved in the Ukraine on both sides, it seems other parts of the world are waking up to the need and the utility of private organizations to assist in national security objectives, whatever that might be. I can tell you there was no Blackwater people in any way, shape, or form in the Ukraine doing anything. But it's funny to see press reports speculate. I think, you know, my son congratulated me. He said, "Dad, you've become Kleenex. You've become the blanket term." So, countries need the flexibility, speed, and innovation that private organizations can provide them for whatever it is they're doing. I mean, you know, this whole idea, particularly for the U.S. market, of inherently governmental. And if you think that the only way the International Space Station is being resupplied by the United States right now is from a private contractor, okay, by SpaceX, not by NASA, not by the Air Force, by a private contractor. If you had said that, you know, 40 some years ago when I was born, you would have been laughed out of the room, because of course it was the mighty NASA was the only one that could do it. But NASA spent itself into a box, became a big stratified expensive bureaucracy, which couldn't afford to do things on its own anymore. And I'm afraid that's what the U.S. military is headed towards. I think they're there already. And so the private sector is the only way you can kind of measure against what something should cost commercially and get any kind of fiscal sanity back into the conduct of those kind of activities. And so I think other countries are figuring that out as well, whether it's in Asia, in Europe, in Eastern Europe. You'll see a lot more private organizations stepping up to try to do X, Y, or Z on behalf of their countries.
What was the biggest logistical lesson you learned from Blackwater? Because as you said, you brought your own stuff, you brought your own people, everything was yours. That's a big operation to be able to cycle that through multiple war zones. And I'm sure some of that skill and know-how is why you're working in your current venture. What did you take from Blackwater about logistics that you thought was most important or most enlightening to you?
I believe it comes down to the people. You know, whether, for example, Blackwater operated 26 some aircraft in Afghanistan, many of them out of Bagram. Blackwater was not provided any kind of hangar space by the Air Force. So we had to do engine changes, heavy maintenance on our aircraft in Afghanistan outside. And it took good, hard, smart people to be able to do that. They were not expecting a 72-degree heated hangar and air-conditioned in the summertime to conduct their work. It comes down to the kind of people you need that will dig down and get the job done. Their hangar per se was a 40-foot shipping container that contained their parts. So it, to me, anybody can buy equipment. It's a matter of finding, vetting, hiring, and retaining the right kind of people. After that, it's just equipment.
Two last questions. I know you have limited time. You talked about the people. Take a moment. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about the people of Blackwater. Like you say on the cover of your book, you know, this is you're done keeping quiet. I want to give you the chance to talk about those people that, you know, they get vilified a lot in the media and still, you know, some people are one track, have a one track mind, are still talking about it. Talk a bit about those people of Blackwater, what they did, and the way that you see them today, having moved on.
Well, you know, they were a true all volunteer force. They volunteered to go to work every day. There was no stop loss. There was no UCMJ held over their head that they had to show up to work. So we had to provide the right people with the right equipment and the right colleagues to go do it. And they did a fantastic job. I mean, being protecting all diplomats, or most all diplomats in two active war zones, the two most active war zones the United States has had in the last 40 or 50 years, and having no diplomats killed or injured is an impressive feat. And our people did that. And I'm mighty proud of them. Look, with sometimes mistakes happen. We employ people, not robots. And even robots, or even a turbine engine, as I've said in the past, breaks once in a while. And a turbine only has a couple of moving parts. We had thousands of moving parts. So I'm extremely proud of the Blackwater team, what they did and what they accomplished. And, you know, it's interesting that how many are contacting me to find out what I'm doing next, because they want to experience the camaraderie, the sense of mission and excellence that we provided them at Blackwater before. You know, it's extremely satisfying. I get a note from somebody that read the book and they say, "Hey, boss, just want you to know that, you know, the 5 years I worked at Blackwater were the best years of my career." And that to me is very, very professionally satisfying. And I'm thankful to provide them that kind of experience. And I'm thankful to them for the great job they did.
Yeah, loyalty is incredibly important. One, in your book and in multiple interviews, you said that your greatest regret was going to work for the State Department. Now, since the State Department work was such a huge part of Blackwater abroad, what had you not taken those contracts, how do you envision the company would have expanded? How would have it looked different than the way it did? Outside of the media, not talking about media perspective, but I'm talking operationally.
That certainly pulled us. It slanted us too much into the security business. We were good at aviation. We were good at training. We were good at logistics, all those functions, and we were good at security. But their need in working for a highly political, highly, I would say, not a common sense customer is a good warning to any business. Don't let yourself get whipsawed by an ignorant, I would say kind of a clueless customer that pulls you into things that you shouldn't be doing. I mean, look, I should have, when they, in hindsight, we wanted cameras in the vehicles to prevent the he said, she said scenario like Nisour Square. And I should have, to the point of basically issuing a labor stoppage, going on strike per se, "We are not doing another mission unless you provide us cameras in the vehicles, full stop." I should have, you know, big regret. I think if I'd provided cameras, it would have, you know, the cruiser cams, like a policeman has on the dashboard of their vehicle, it would have prevented the bureaucratic onslaught that we experienced after Nisour Square, because the camera speaks for itself.
In your book, you mentioned the 180-page tactical document that describes a lot of the things that the company was told to do, which sounds bizarre coming from the State Department, which often talks about soft power, the tactics that you were recommended.
It's important to remember the State Department was issuing belt-fed heavy machine guns and grenade launchers. So this is not just stuff that we picked up off the street and were using. That was government-issued very heavy weaponry.
Now, before we go, I know we're coming up on our time limit. I have one final question. You're a very experienced guy. You're a former Navy SEAL. You're an entrepreneur. Your Skype icon is the people from Kung Fu Panda.
That's from that was from my kids. I have three little boys, and they're big fans of Kung Fu Panda. So I was watching the movie and I screenshotted it and I put that on for my little boys, yes, when they Skype me.
Well, sir, it's been a pleasure having you on. I know you have to get back to your business, but before we go, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Today my business is my kids, because I travel a lot. I will say starting a business in your 40s is not nearly as fun or easy as doing it in your 20s. But I guess I'm a bit more experienced now, and hopefully know some of those pitfalls better than I did in my 20s.
Well, and as it says in your book too, starting that business in your 20s wasn't that easy. The amount of bandwidth that you had to, from tragedy to tactical challenges, I mean, that's incredible. Everybody really needs to read this book. Sir, before we go, we've already plugged your book. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug, to bring up, assets or readings that people should go to, even if they're not necessarily from you or anyone that you know, maybe books that you've read that you would recommend so that people can better understand the tactical challenges of security or business or even the military writ large? I mean, you have a very broad experience and you're very well read. Anything that you would recommend to our audience?
Oh, I recommend To Dare and to Conquer by Derek Liebhardt. That's it's a great military history book. It's really a history of special operations units, or call it a handful of picked men that have made an outsized difference on the battlefield throughout history, from Alexander the Great to the present. It reads like a movie script. Very well done. Right now, I'm reading Invisible Armies by Max Boot, who it is an exhaustive, detailed compendium of, I would say, asymmetric warfare. And I think it's important, you know, in the U.S., call it the defense industrial complex, has trained and equipped to fight the fold-a-gap battle for the last 60 years. Okay, fold-a-gap is the gap in the mountains in Germany where it's easy to drive a tank through. And so for all those years, squaring off against the Soviets in the Cold War, tanks, artillery, rockets, air, everything to support a big conventional land battle. Invisible Armies kind of throws that assumption on its head, because military planners always want to say, well, guerrilla wars are just an exception, not the norm. And Max Boot very, very well makes the case that insurgencies are the norm in warfare, and rare is the World War II style major conventional dust up.
Absolutely. So, they have the names of irregular and regular warfare switched up. So the irregular warfare is the one that happens all the time. Well, we have come to the end of the podcast, and I don't want to overstay my welcome. This is Sea Control. You can find us at www.cimsec, that is simsec.org, and on Twitter at simsec. And of course, you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Stream Radio and any of those other places that draw from feeds that I don't understand, because I only have so much time in the day to learn how to do IT. Sir, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking your time out.
Thanks for having me. You bet.